Hello and welcome to the Lighthouse London podcast. I'm Russell. I'm back on the podcast after a little hiatus. Tom has been doing the tough work for quite a while, and I'm joined today by Josh Ellis.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm the newest member of the Lighthouse team. I'm a developer.
Our latest hire.
Yep.
Very exciting stuff, if you ask me.
Exciting times.
And we're going to be talking about pattern libraries today. Something that we've been bringing into our projects more and more, and it's kind of a deliverable that I don't think a lot of clients have a solid understanding for and whether it's right for them, so we can talk a bit about what they are and when to use them. So do you want to maybe give a little overview of what pattern libraries are to you, Josh?
Okay, so as you said, they're probably not particularly well known outside of sort of tech, but they are the kind of hot topic at the moment. And it's really about, instead of thinking about websites or really any kind of view, so apps and stuff, instead of thinking of pages or views, we're talking about the bits that make up pages and views. So a button, a menu, any component like that would be considered a component that you integrate into your pattern library. And it's about keeping a consistent design and consistent way of doing things when you've got lots of pages or lots of developers or, you know, any app really that scales beyond more than a few pages or views can get very complicated very quickly. And you find yourself often solving the same problem. So it's kind of about documenting the solution to a problem and then repeating that solution rather than solving problems again and again.
Exactly, So we're kind of saying that, you know, the traditional approach would be like, these are the pages that we need. These ones need a design like this. And you just design those pages and then it gets built like that. And that's kind of how it works. And then when you need new pages later on, we'll design a new page for you, and then there's that.
You do the
whole
shebang again.
That can be like indefinite. Yeah, exactly. Whereas really, like, when you break down what's been designed for you as like a series of, as you said, like problems you've solved. So this is what like menus look like. This is what users' avatars look like. This is what buy buttons look like, and all the different buttons we use. Once you break it down in that way and you present it as kind of like a set of things that you've already built, then you can, instead of thinking about like, we need that new template, it's like, well, actually we need a menu component here, and we need like a select for someone to choose something that we've done before. And actually what you realize is that you can use your pre-existing components to build a new view, which would essentially be that page you're trying to do. So yeah, it's kind of like that asset library, isn't it? This is what we've already built. Do we actually need to design something new, i.e. like spend money and time coming up with that solution? Or do we already have something in place that we can use for it? So there's definitely like a time-saving aspect to it.
There's definitely some investment in time, first of all, but ultimately, in the long run, we'll save a considerable amount of time and a considerable amount of cost.
Absolutely.
And it's a good checks and it offers a good sort of check and balance against design decisions as well. So when you're designing your fifth banner that has multiple scrollable carousels or whatever, and it's so slightly different to the last one, it does offer a check to sort of be, you know, do we need this new version of the thing? Is it not the same version of the old thing? Does the extra weight in code, the extra time developing it, the extra time designing it, does that offer some value to the user and to, you know, whoever it's for ultimately? So for us, our clients.
Yeah.
Does that offer enough value to warrant that amount of cost?
And even like thinking about that consistency for users who are coming to your product or your website again and again, and you're building new things for them, the more new approaches and like differences that you're adding in is actually like a less consistent experience for them. So you kind of need to like keep that boiled down, like, this is how we speak in this component, like this is how we, you know, communicate in that way, and the more kind of ways that you branch off in that kind of muddies the way that, you know, you speak to people in your with your interface.
Absolutely. I mean, it almost sounds too obvious to point out, but if you have an icon somewhere on a website and that icon does something or represents some bit of information, say, for example, the classic like hamburger menu, you know, the three lines in the corner of the website that brings up the menu. if you're on one page and that hamburger menu, you push it and a menu comes down from the top, and you're on another page and the hamburger menu does something else, it means that you can drag something. That's going to be very confusing for a user. So, you know, it's hugely valuable for a user to be able to go to a website and know how to use it before they've used it, or learn how to use it very, very quickly and expect repeatable behavior. I mean, that's just good UX, really. Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't seen a pattern library before, I think probably the most comparable document that people might be more aware of is like brand guidelines. Because some of the fundamentals of a pattern library are kind of shared in brand guidelines. So in your branding documents, you'll have like, these are the colors that we use, like they give you specific values. And then they'll be like, these are the typefaces that we've chosen for our, you know, corporate font. And these are the ones that we, you know, these are the weights that we use, all that kind of stuff. And those are kind of like some of the fundamentals that go into a pattern library. Like you will define like these are the colors we use so that when it comes to, you know, designing something new, well, these are the colors we use for that. So do we actually need to introduce the new blue? And it's essentially a similar way. It's like, these are the guidelines we've got at the moment. This thing keeps growing. So if you need to introduce something new, you can, but you're aware of what already exists. And yeah, it just gives you that kind of boundaries of what you should be building within, essentially.
Yeah, I think a good example of what a pattern library looks like compared to maybe brand guidelines is there's loads of really good ones out there, but the MailChimp one is one of the best that I've seen.
Yeah.
And they essentially have three different documents. And one is what they call a style guide, which is slightly interesting because it's kind of different to what most people would expect from a style guide.
Mm-hmm.
Their style guide is about language and about communication. So it's like, here's the tone that we use. You know, we're sort of sensible but playful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when the right time is to err on the side of playful, and when the right time is to err on the side of sensible. Again, it sounds, some of it sounds somewhat obvious, but having it documented, and largely this is what a lot of this is about, is having it documented.
Absolutely.
And having the way that we name things, for example, both in language and both in the component library is really important for people's perception. But yeah, they have the style guides, they have their pattern library. I think this is available at like patterns.mailchimp.com or whatever, and styleguide.com. And then they have the branding guidelines. So the branding guidelines is exactly what you're talking about. It's colors, typography, how to use the logo, when to use it, and how not to use it, for example. And then the pattern library is, here are some bits of code that literally make up all of our digital assets that we build. So yeah, I'd recommend checking that out for a good point of reference as to what something like that.
Yeah, so also we found that companies are like making these public facing. Most of these pattern libraries are like web documents. You know, they're built in HTML, that kind of thing. So, but companies are now actually making these public. So as you say, like MailChimp have one. What were some other? There are some very popular ones that I was looking for yesterday.
BBC, you've got a
BBC good have one. Library. Yeah, yeah, and they all have slightly different interpretations as well. Like they may not have a tone of voice kind of thing going on there.
No, something like the BBC have a very strong bias towards how to make things accessible and how to be performant and stuff.
Yeah,
which is reasonable because the audience that they're serving, you know, they have to serve every single person. They don't have a niche. They have to serve every single person as well as possible.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it serves as one of the best examples of why you would use a pattern library. Because, again, it's how to make certain things accessible is really difficult. When I talk about accessibility, I mean people being able to use them in a way that you might not anticipate someone using a website.
Yeah.
So using assistive technologies like screen readers, or maybe just, you know, maybe your eyesight isn't as good as it once was and you just need to zoom in on something, for example.
Yeah.
And there are, some of that can be a little bit challenging. Some of that you get for free with the way a browser works, but some of that can be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, it's a matter of they've solved that problem. They've spent a lot of time researching that problem, and thinking about it. And then once they come to a solution, they don't need to come to a new solution again until it becomes a problem again.
Yeah, yeah.
So they probably save themselves a great deal of time.
I imagine so.
And it's interesting that they do make it public, because I often use the BBC style guide as a point of reference when I'm not sure how to do something to make it accessible as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, their style guide saves me time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Saves our clients time, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So as you said, it is quite a it is a talking point for companies, and it is a little bit of a, like, you know, look at us, we've really done a good job of this. And rightfully so, because the companies that do it, and the ones that I've seen and are usually held up as being really good examples of it, usually are on point, you know. Like Airbnb, Amazon, BBC, stuff like that. I mean, who doesn't want to be included on that
list? Yeah, absolutely.
Hey everyone, just a quick break from the show. Hope you're enjoying. A quick note over here, Lighthouse are hiring. We're looking for a designer and a developer to join the team to help us create amazing web experiences. If that's you, or if that's someone you know, then give us a shout. You can drop us a line at hello@wearelighthouse.com. Check out the site for more details, wearelighthouse.com/jobs. Cheers.
So let's talk about, like, how you put a patent library to action. So say, for example, our product needs a new feature. The traditional way would be to go to the designer and have them, you know, look at working out, like, a design for it. So you're sketching it. So sketching time's happening, design time's happening. That thing gets signed off. Then you're going to go to developer. This thing's going to get...
Hopefully it's the same designer as well.
Hopefully it's the same designer.
It looks vaguely like the same website.
Not just looking the same, but also so he has an idea of, like, what all of the other things that have been designed before look like. Do you know what I mean? Because that's one of the things that's missing. So you take that thing that's designed, you get it built, like there's back-end work being done, front-end work being done, and then you can publish your feature. So you've basically touched on every possible person you'd need to put that feature out, essentially, right?
Same as you would if you were starting a new website from scratch. It's
exactly
the same process.
Yeah, okay.
Historically, yeah.
So then if we had a patent library in place, how would that process differ?
So depending on how... It obviously depends on a case-by-case basis. It always depends. But let's say you were trying to implement a new feature that required something that had a relatively similar bit of UI to something that you already have. Well, instead of going through that whole design process again, your development team might be able to take advantage of the designs that are already in place, so problems that have already been solved. And they, depending on how sophisticated that feature is and how sophisticated your patent library is, it could be a relatively smaller amount of design, or it could be literally zero design. Here are the components. Put them together. Relatively small amount of front end, perhaps no front end.
I think it's quite possible no front end.
If it's documented really well. And then the feature gets implemented in probably a fraction of the time.
It's why
some people might be familiar with Twitter's Bootstrap, which is like the ultimate patent library for every website ever. And it's because, again, people thought about this and spent a lot of time contributing to it and a lot of time documenting these things. So when it comes to, I don't know, say I'm a front-end developer, so, you know, I have a interest in this kind of stuff, but some people don't necessarily want to deal with the front end, but they do want to build a product, they do want to build a thing, and they have back end knowledge. Twitter Bootstrap's usually the thing that they reach for, because it tells them how to put the bits together. They already have the Lego blocks to build the thing that they need.
Exactly.
And they can just go and smash it together, and they can get things built.
I don't think we should smash it together. If you're playing with Lego, you shouldn't be smashing them anyway.
Oh, no, that's
they
true.
Slot together beautifully.
Obviously. Until you step on one and stuff.
Exactly.
This analogy has got out of control.
Good. Okay. So that's like maybe just a little example of you know, where patent libraries are good to save you time later down the line. And also I think there's part of it is that, you know, as the product owner and the person who's in charge of this thing, having a patent library to use as reference for what you might be able to build next. So you've got an idea for a feature, you actually don't need to consult like the designer and developers being like, do we need to build something new, right? You have that library in front of you of like all of the constituent parts that you've already paid to have built. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So you can work out what that view is going to look like just from what you have existing. You may then even realize like the stuff that you're going to need built as new. It's just like it allows more people to have responsibility of like what we already have, what we can produce, you know, that kind of thing.
It also enforces some kind of structure in the way that you build things, which if in any kind of, I'm sure this applies to lots of industries, but in any kind of development environment, mm-hmm. One of the most important things to having consistent and maintainable application is having an enforceable structure, something mm-hmm. that is, when somebody new comes along, they can look at it and immediately understand what's happening mm-hmm. because there is a logical way to in which way things are laid out, mm-hmm. which file structures are, and which different bits of functionality are grouped together.
Yeah.
I mean, that in programming, we'd call that a design pattern. It's kind of the same thing,
yeah.
Which has been considered a best practice for as long as programming has existed. Mm-hmm. Rather than just creating bits of code that do things, you usually have some sort of pattern, some sort of model to build around. So really, this is just extending that same logic and that same reasoning to the front end. Which makes a lot of sense.
It works for
back end programming, so why shouldn't it work for front?
Yeah, totally. So one of the things that I've seen that's quite interesting is a way that you can begin that audit. So if you have an existing product or website and you think, actually, a pattern library is going to save us some time, maybe we should bring that into place.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first steps that I've seen is quite interesting. I haven't done this myself, but it makes a lot of sense to me, is to take as many views as you can find in your product. So like screens, essentially, this page, this template, this interaction, print all of those out. So you have like a mess of basically every component that you have
old school
available to you. Yeah. So then you cut out each part. So it'll be like, we'll cut out the navigation. So that's our one component here.
Are we taking this back to the Lego analogy?
Yes. Yeah, sure,
I feel like we're going down that
sure,
route.
Sure, although
again.
Lego and scissors, I would say, is not, just because you've got like those two extra points on the Lego block, don't try and cut it off.
Oh.
We've all been there. So what you want to do is like print out as many views as you can. Cut out those pieces so that you can work out like what all the constituent parts are, and you're essentially looking at like a library of all the elements that your interface uses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start simplifying things. You can be like, well, actually, we've got like three buttons of very slightly different variation in size, and the font weight is slightly different. That it's those kind of small things you can start simplifying. Like, we've got two types of menus going on here. Maybe our breadcrumbs work differently in this section for some reason. And you start to consolidate it yourself just with some pieces of paper that you have. You can simplify things into groups. And now you've worked out essentially like what your pattern library can consist of. That's like a really lo-fi way of introducing a pattern library without, needing a designer or developer to even start building it. You're doing your own audit of what you already have.
Definitely. It's a great way of quickly realizing where you're doing really well and perhaps where there's bits of UI that maybe look similar but don't quite do the same thing.
Which is kind of waste, really.
It's confusing. Reducing,
exactly.
I actually have done something similar to that.
Oh, cool.
I actually did an audit for a client, and they had several web properties, all of which looked pretty much like different websites, to be honest.
Right.
And it was kind of confusing because you'd go from the sort of brochure side of the website to the e-commerce side of the website, which looked wildly different. Because they were built on completely different technology stacks by two different sets of developers.
Right, I can see why you were hired at this point.
Well, they had really little to do with each other, which was fine in terms of did it work, but it was, we did a bit of research and users found it really confusing. And in fact, we found a lot of people dropping off at the beginning because they kind of thought it was a bit spammy. It kind of felt a bit like, why have I clicked a link and I'm in a different website.
You're like been thrown behind a closed door kind of thing. Like, this is now where you buy things. I don't know if it is.
It's a bit of a jarring experience, right? Like,
absolutely.
If you were on Amazon, you click the buy it button and then you went to the same URL, but everything was a different color.
And there's a suspicious Amazon logo at the top. You're like, I don't trust this is the real Amazon now.
Yeah, that has a real influence on people's perception of things like how trustworthy it is, and should I buy from this place, and does this look like a reputable company, and that sort of thing really impacts how people perceive you and your brand. So it becomes more than just is it easier for developers to put things together quicker and are users moderately less confused. It's sometimes it can be as drastic as a user can actually leave because they're genuinely confused by, from their point of view, the same website. It might be two different bits of technology that are put together in an interesting way.
Yeah.
But
they're
going to bounce. They're not interested in
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. How did you find doing the audit? What did you do for that?
It was really interesting. Essentially, we did it in a relatively short period of time, but what we ended up doing was taking some components from Twitter's Bootstrap, using that to initially do the front-end redesign, and then iterating over each component and replacing it with our own component when we felt that it wasn't doing doing what we wanted it to do. And they got a lot of mileage out of that. The point of view of the brand identity, it just looked a lot more, and the research that we did afterwards sort of pointed to that. Lots less people dropped off on the immediate page landing, and in terms of performance as well, it was a lot faster because there was a lot of shared code between the two. So that made it a lot easier for people going between the two sites that are on mobile devices, you know, something that might have a bit of a ropey data connection. If you go from one website to the other, why do you want to re-download a whole bunch of new stuff?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
When it's just shared between the two assets.
That makes absolute sense.
And the development teams on both sides seem to have an easier time of putting new features together as well. We did a really good job of documenting it. In fact, we spent most of our time documenting than actually building stuff. And it was a really interesting.
It's just so much more clarity on what you've already spent time doing, you know. And it may have been something that you like built a year ago that everyone's kind of forgotten you'd put that effort in.
It sounds pretty obvious, especially sort of in programming and stuff. You try and solve a problem once, and once you've solved it, don't solve it again. Because that's generally not a good use of time.
Absolutely.
So the interesting thing about something like a pattern library as a deliverable to a client is the way in which we consume web pages or web apps or however you want to call them is ultimately we have a view at a time, right? You land on a page and you only ever consume one page at a time. So if a client comes to us and they say, we need a website and we agree to build it and we say, we're not going to build any pages, we're going to build you some Lego blocks. That can be a little bit of an odd experience because it's possibly not what people, if they've worked with web agencies or anyone that works in the web before, perhaps that's not what they've been used to receiving as deliverable. Or if you've never worked with anyone like that before, it might not be quite what you're expecting, and reasonably so, because like I said, that's not how we consume the web. So what we'd actually hand over is often something that looks kind of like you said, a kind of microsite that serves as documentation for how to put these components together. And that essentially covers all the points that we said, you know, it's more maintainable, it's more reusable, and can ultimately save time. But it can be an interesting handover.
I think in terms of like where it fits in workflow, so wireframing is pretty much an unskippable step no matter what you're building. And wireframing still will happen in views, you know, people are sorting out their content into like the architecture of the site and you're flowing between the content, that sort of thing. With that kind of completed set of wireframes, you can take that and break that down into its constituent parts and be like, well, we have these things, this is something we've reused here. And that is essentially looking at like a series of components that you need to design. So like that can be your starting building blocks, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then so that first deliverable might be, so like taking a step back from that, like here's the colors we're going to use, here's the typography that we're going to decide on, and here's a grid system that we think was going to work for those layouts. So that's like the kind of pre-component stuff. It kind of fits into all of those bits. It makes up all those in some little way. And then it might be like, okay, let's like design what our header looks like and like build, you know, the navigation in the header, that sort of thing. And once you like start building each of those components, you're like essentially creating all of the blocks that are going to make those views. And those are just the views that you know you need now. But you're really like creating those blocks that are going to be used, you know, going on for as long as you need to keep adding views and features to your product. So that's how that would work. You know, you're giving feedback on each component, knowing how they fit into the larger scheme of things. From your wireframes.
And that requires a little bit of foresight. But conceptually, the web already kind of is components. Like we make websites out of HTML. and you have a limited amount of HTML elements that you can choose from. Mm-hmm. It's all divs and spans at the end of the day.
I knew you were going to go down some path of telling us that the web is just something.
Well, okay.
This is a preview to our listeners of what Josh's rhetoric is like in the office, which he'll sort of turn around and look quizzically and say, what? You know, actually, the web is just, and then like put in the word of the day. Like, the web is just like fish in a stream, man. And that's when the headphones go on. It's like, sorry, Josh, busy, mate. Sorry, I can't do this.
I'm dating this podcast by saying the web is just divs, because right around the corner, we've got things that are not divs.
Yeah.
We've got native web components and all these sorts of things.
Is that a preview to an upcoming podcast?
Perhaps. Yeah. I mean,
just you're going to be doing it on your own, mate. No one wants to host
this. This will be my own website in which we philosophically explore the meaning of each HTML element.
Mm-hmm.
What's a DL really mean? Really?
The DL on a DL, my friend. Right, no one's going to understand any of that. Good job.
So it's the way the web seems to be heading. It seems to be a best practice that seems to have been adopted across the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really see too many arguments against the pattern library at this point.
It's forward thinking to take on that time. And in terms of, you know, investment of time and money and like thinking about pattern library instead of just like, well, we're going to design you 5 templates.
Mm.
There is more effort and thinking going on at the beginning, but that as soon as that's kind of done and out of the way, you have this resource, which is much more valuable to you than like 5 page designs, like infinitely so. It's really about like just taking that step back and sort of investing the time in something that you can reuse, like for the lifespan of your product, essentially. And you know, I think the important thing is like pattern libraries are known as these like living documents, in that it's not that you just design all the elements and then you're kind of stuck with that thing. Like that's your limitation.
It's more about
like, when do we need to introduce like new things? And you know, like when a redesign comes around, you're redesigning the components that you've been using. Do you know what I mean? Like it's that thing will keep changing with you as your product grows and as your requirements change. So just another update from Lighthouse. We actually have 2 new vacancies, one for a new designer and one for a developer. We're taking applications at wearelighthouse.com/jobs. So if this stuff is interesting to you, or you know someone who is well into their pattern libraries, then yeah, please send us your CVs and such.
Come build a pattern library with us.
Yeah. Where do pattern libraries fit in? Who do you think it's like a best fit for?
Okay, so if you have absolutely no product and you're starting from nothing, maybe it's too soon for a pattern library. Maybe you don't need to think about that as your very first thing.
Yeah.
However, if you have any kind of web property application, any kind of product that you're working on, and you want that business, that application, that product to grow, and you expect to add features and you expect to add value and you want more people to use it.
Yeah.
I think that's for everyone. It seems logical to me that if you want your business to grow, why would you not give yourself a tool set to allow yourself to do that faster and easier?
Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. If you're going to keep building on this idea, on this interface, on this product, you need to have some reference to be building it from, and some, you know, that golden document that you can
you have a business plan, right?
When you
start a business, usually
hopefully
you have some goals in mind,
exactly,
and you have some smaller chunks, you have some smaller definable objectives to get there. So it's the same when you're building a web product. You need the bits to help you to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Well, thanks for listening to us rant about pattern libraries and when you should be using them. Thanks very much, Josh.
No problem. Thank you.
Cheers.